Hey, it's Francis Lamb. Thanks for downloading this week's podcast, and we're bringing you more of the conversation I had with my friend, the Southern food historian John T. Edge. We talked about the secret history of Tennessee hippies and tofu on the regular show, but here, John T. tells a tale of two different fried chicken empires, from a bitter Colonel Sanders and a glorified Mahalia Jackson. Enjoy. Say, John T., thanks for coming back in.
I'm happy to be back, Francis.
All right, so the last time we talked, we were talking about hippies in the South and the surprising ingenuity of them in those communities where they invented soy ice cream and started making tofu commercially. But I want to talk to you about a different kind of Southern ingenuity that I think was happening at the same time. Fast food is the product in a lot of our minds of California and Illinois, talking about the McDonald's brothers and Ray Kroc. But you argue in your book that the South had a lot to do with it. Tell me about the South's role in the development of fast food.
Well, if you think about an iconic American figure like Colonel Sanders, who rose to fame in Kentucky, the interesting thing for me about Sanders is Sanders, with his pressure fried chicken, took this hyper traditional Southern food, this farm grounded Southern food, fried chicken. And by way of that pressure cooker, by way of selling his shtick and his kind of plantation mean to the masses, he turned this hyper-traditional food into the ultimate modern food. And then it became that food sold in those buckets, and it became that food sold through the drive-thru. It became the most modern of foods in the kind of idealized fast food.
But it's interesting because he, you know, he was fabulously wealthy, it sounds like. In the book, he's driving around a Rolls Royce with his face on it. And you know, everyone, I think literally everyone in the world pretty much knows the face of Colonel Harlan Sanders. But when we meet him in your book, he is salty and he is angry and sad.
Yeah, there's,
what's the deal?
I mean, I think as Sanders sold his business and then saw it resold by multiple corporations, and you see the product in which he took so much pride, you see it degrade. Sanders takes great offense at that. There's a lot of cussing in this part of the book, which I probably can't read on the radio, but there's a whole bunch of cussing because Colonel Sanders is mad at himself. Colonel Sanders, I believe, recognizes his own complicity in the building of fast food franchises as a standard for a future tenth South. He recognizes that if there's a problem, it's his fault.
It's interesting he saw a problem because he, you know, he essentially invented a way to make this traditional food, this traditional fried chicken, and make it so you could sell it real fast and make a lot of money on it. So at some point, like, what was the cause of a change of heart? Why did he see a problem?
And, you know, this is me reading into his actions, his words, his deeds. There's not a moment wherein Colonel Harlan Sanders has this epiphany and recognizes that the decimation of regional cuisine begins with him. But if you read between the lines, you hear, and when you watch old clips of him, you see a man angry at himself more so than anyone else. And I believe it's because he recognizes in this moment that he's lived a lie. You know, even his title, Colonel Sanders, was an honorific. He was no colonel. That was a title bestowed upon him. His goatee was bleached. His white suit was not something to which he was born. It was garb he clothed himself in. You know, the promise of his fried chicken and, in many ways, the life he lived was a conceit.
That's wild. It's funny because now I think, you know, he's a literal cartoon. He's a drawing on a box of fried chicken, right?
Right. And there's a great example of that. I've got an album, a framed album above my desk, and it's Colonel Sanders' Tijuana Picnic. And it's Colonel Sanders kind of cozying beneath a tree with his silver cane in his lap. And the reverse lists all the songs. And it's like, you know, Herb Albert inspired kind of Mexican-American drivel. And so he was this facile character that took on all these different personas to sell this bird. And in that selling, there's a kind of discomforting position he takes. And I would argue that that discomforting position ultimately unsettles him.
So, okay, so let's look at a different perspective on the rise of fast food in your book. And that is, I don't want to say the African-American perspective, but it seems like a perspective that is specific to the Black community. And Mahalia Jackson, the gospel star, who I think I read in your book also, was probably the person who told Dr. King, tell him about the dream when he was giving his speech.
Right.
Later also became a sort of Colonel Sanger's figure in that she was the face of a fried chicken chain. But that was a very different interpretation of that. Tell us about that story.
You know, the Mahalia Jackson fried chicken system story is very much linked to Colonel Sanders. The money made by investors in Colonel Sanders inspired a range of investors across the country. And a group of businessmen in Nashville first underwrote Minnie Pearl, the Grand Ole Opry comedian, and a fried chicken chain that was to sell to working class white consumers emerged with her name attached to it and with a color scheme inspired by the colors of her hat, which she famously wore. Their next step was selling to Black consumers, and they put up money and built allegiances with Black civil rights figures, of all things. Benjamin Hooks, who had been president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He and Joseph Lowry and Ralph David Abernathy joined together when this first Mahalia Jackson's was announced to break ground and celebrate the possibilities. They referred to it in that moment as a declaration of Negro economic independence. So white investors step in to bankroll, in part, a Black-owned fried chicken restaurant, 50% Black, 50% white. And Mahalia Jackson is brought in as the spokesperson at a moment in her career when she is probably one of the most beloved figures in American music and certainly one of the most beloved figures in Black American music. It was almost this, Francis, it was almost as if blood had been spilled at lunch counters, if those places were tainted, then fried chicken franchises, fast food franchises, were kind of deracinated. No blood had been spilled there. These were new. These were tabula rasa. There was economic possibility here. It was a modern thing. It wasn't some deep South plantation gig. This was new. They referred to it in the moment. They said, this is a relationship of partnership, not plantationship.
Yeah. It's a reinvention. It's a way to reinvent those old roles and that horrible history and sort of wipe it clean and say, this is a way to look forward.
And it's a way to, it's a way to drive Black economic independence and use white money to do it. That was the idea behind it. That was the ultimate goal. It wasn't selling fried chicken. It was building Black wealth, at least for the Blacks who participated in it.
Right. What an amazing story. Thank you so much, John T.
Thank you, Francis.
John T. Edge is the author of The Potlicker Papers, A Food History of the Modern South.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.